Welcome to a Q&A edition of the Global Lithium Podcast. This one's a little bit out of the ordinary, as I, from time to time, do what I call Ask Me Anything Zoom calls, plagiarizing my daughter's Instagram Ask Me Anything, but doing it instead of with a group who can log on. I get names submitted either through a DM or email, pick a couple of people out of a hat, and then do individual 30-minute calls. The call I did yesterday was about 35 minutes. It was someone that I had actually met at an event about 18 months ago. I didn't recall the name when it was picked. You know, this person is quite well informed of the lithium industry, really participates more in an adjacent business, but I was very impressed by the quality of the questions, and they were very typical of what I get on compensated expert calls, so I thought I would just give you a feel for a real interaction. That said, I tend to be almost brutally candid on expert calls, and you know, in some cases I'm asked about specific personalities, other people that do what I do, and what I think their credibility is, things like that. I'm not going to include any of that kind of narrative in a podcast. It's just not appropriate. So this recording is a little bit choppy because I also say certain things that you know, also are either not necessarily confidential information, but information that I don't put out there for free. I get very specific, and you know, one of the reasons I'm able to make a living doing this is you know, because of a long time in the industry and experience. And you know, I think I provide a fair amount of insight on these Q&A calls, and I think my guests have done a great service to the industry by coming on the podcast and saying what they know. But, you know, I also think that there's a line that I choose not to cross in terms of candor on the podcast. My 35-minute call was distilled to less than 15 minutes that I felt that was appropriate for me to put on. That having been said, I think there's still a lot of useful information on here, and it was a good interaction. So with that, I am going to leave you to a brief Ask Me Anything Q&A.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Zalandez, a brine field services company providing real-time, actionable data that is saving both exploration companies and producers money in both drilling and completion activities. Find them at www.zelandez.com.
The first question was about gigafactories and the announcements of gigafactories as a metric or surrogate for demand. And I gave him a pretty long answer. I'm not including all that. I probably said too many things that I wouldn't want my broader podcast audience to hear. But from a lithium perspective, announced gigafactories aren't really a critical metric. First of all, you can announce one and it may not be built for years. What you really need to know is, what are the cathode expansions and what's the utilization going to be? And there is a way to know pretty clearly what cathode utilization is going to be, and that's something that I keep pretty much to myself, but it is a very reliable indicator that only a few people in the industry are aware of. So from, you know, my perspective, I will include here part of my answer on the Tesla Gigafactory and how I ultimately became a believer in Tesla, but I'm not somebody who spends a lot of time on announced gigafactories. I think there's, for me, a better metric. The story I relate is about being in Panasonic's office in Osaka the day after the first investment in Tesla was announced. So this is over a decade ago. And I had very mixed feelings about where Panasonic saw the business headed. I incorrectly assumed that somebody making cars in the United States that had never made cars before probably didn't have a bright future. And so that's where this story picks up, me being in the Panasonic offices in Osaka. Just a couple more caveats on this discussion, since I've edited it so heavily. When I talk about Japan holding 9 months of inventory, I'm really talking about the early days in the 90s, and you know that's all kind of changed now. And when I talk about FMC's management not understanding the business, I'm really talking about the corporate management rather than my immediate bosses at the lithium division. So with all those caveats given, I leave you to the episode.
What's this? You know, is my future business predicated on Mr. PayPal? Well, Elon doesn't need me to,
right?
You know, he doesn't need my support. But I mean, I'm now a believer. But I mean, I bought Tesla at 60. I sold most of it at 240. I rue the day. But
sure.
I didn't become a Tesla believer until less than the last year.
Yeah, yeah, that took a long time, right?
And then when I walk out my door, and I live 25 minutes south of Charlotte's airport on a golf course in what all these people around me hoped would stay countryside, and now it's
yep.
And I see three or four Model 3s every day.
Yep, yep.
A year and a half ago, there was one Tesla in this whole area, and that's the guy who was running Albemarle had it. Because yep. they had to have one, because you know, if you're the biggest lithium company in the world, you supply Tesla, you better have a Model S somewhere. But
sure.
you're seeing it. And I see it all. You know, I haven't been to China in a while, and I'm not sure when I'll be back, but I was in Sichuan province walking around Chengdu, and I'm seeing 23-year-old girls driving Teslas. I mean, it's a thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But we're not going to have this major disconnect where all these battery plants are chasing the same product.
I just don't think you're going to have the build out. I mean, look at the narrative, and this is what I love, is you have all these gigafactories, but the Audi e-tron, they couldn't actually build what they wanted to build in 2019 because they couldn't get battery packs. Jaguars, same thing. They couldn't get battery packs. Well, if there's all these battery factories, where the hell are the battery packs?
Yeah.
I think you'll have, and this is the way it's been since the industry started. I mean, I used to get Arch Management when I worked for FMC. You know, they'd read two articles in some magazine and call me and say, what the hell? Batteries grew 25% last year, and our sales only grew 16. And users, here's the thing. The first year, I had Japanese customers that had 9 months of inventory back then because they were afraid they'd be short. And then once the thing starts to mature, they say, you know, let's keep 4 months of inventory. And looking at lithium demand even now is tricky because this is still a maturing industry. And then China totally screws it up. I mean, like right now you can read – You can get a Twitter article to support any narrative you want.
Exactly.
You could probably get 12 of them to support any narrative you want.
That's why it's so confusing to read all this stuff.
When I tell people, I mean, I've talked to, in since January, I've talked to multi-billion-dollar investors on four continents that were all now having an interest in lithium. I got a dog here. I mean, you know what? I got a lot of friends and a dog. And these guys call me, and they're all smart people. They're all smarter than I am. But it's so easy to get confused. Because when you do what I do, I get so many people that aren't real.
Sure.
Saying, oh, yeah, we got $5 billion we want to deploy in green energy. And when are these guys that keep talking, who are really sincerely interested? He wouldn't have done all that if there wasn't a pull the trigger type. We got to decide, because I said, you know, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I guess they all read Morgan Stanley stuff. That's why they're not jumping in.
Well, it's funny. I've done 350 hours of expert calls, mostly with hedge funds and U.S. investors and those kind of guys. But I've never actually had a retainer relationship with a U.S. company. It's China, Japan, Australia, Argentina. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah. But I mean, to go back to your question, I don't think all those battery plants are going to get built. I don't think half of them are going to get.
Just on a quality issue, is Orocobre, is their quality issue fixable?
My answer to my question was a long story. And because I don't really want to reveal the person I'm referring to, so I cut out a significant piece of the story, but I pick it back up with advice that was given to the management of Orocobre at the time, that the market being as strong as it was, that they could actually produce a lower quality product than even industrial grade, and at least initially do quite well.
You know, that's a really interesting question. There's a market for bad products, basically. And, you know, he said, you can make this 97% product. We'll buy it. We'll buy X thousand tons. You can't have that bad a product and then think bicarbonation is going to fix it.
Yep.
What they did was a wise person tries to take everything out, every offensive thing out as early as possible in the process.
Yep.
They didn't really do that. And, you know, Orocobre had never done lithium. The great kamikaze wind came, and they started up right when the price spiked.
Yep.
And they were able to sell garbage product for a premium until, I mean, that's the best indication of when did the supply situation really change. Just look at Orocobre's pricing.
Yep.
Because it fell like a rock.
Yep.
When nobody else's did, because they were the low-end guy.
Yeah.
And now you see the same thing with SQM. And SQM can say whatever they want.
Yeah. So how did that change so quickly, though?
It didn't change quick. And that's the other narrative. I mean, if you go back three or four years, the battery product was 35 to 40% of demand.
Right.
So they were making about 50% product that you could sell to the battery industry. So they lot selected. FMC did the same thing. They made a higher percentage of better product. I mean, when they were still in the carbonate game. And Lanegra had the same problems, but they've gradually worked out of it. I mean, they're probably making 100% battery quality now. That was a problem with Lanegra too. They changed some design things because they knew they had to get to 90% battery quality, or, you know, the math wasn't going to work.
Got it. And
when SQM, I mean, you just go back. I mean, if you read my stuff, I was an SQM bull for a long time. When Patricio Salminiak left my love affair with SQM, Ramos, you know, I don't like his style. And, you know, them saying, oh, yeah, we're being statesmen, we're building 20,000 tons of inventory. You know, it's just like you can't prove we're not.
Yeah.
So if you look at their
It's disappointing. It's really disappointing.
And they probably can right that ship, but they need to admit it. You know, that's the thing. And you know, maybe I'm naive that way, but that was the same thing with Albemarle. I mean, I think Masters now is trying. You saw the first earnings call. He's kind of changing the narrative a little bit.
Is LAC your best idea?
Yeah. Lithium Americas has two advantages that other juniors don't have. They have a very strong partner.
Mm-hmm.
And they have people who have done it before. John Evans ran FMC Lithium. Rene LeBlanc's probably the most knowledgeable hydroxide guy in the world.
Yep.
So it's not the learn on the job crew.
Yep.
Plus they're financed.
We would like to thank our sponsor, Zalandez, for bringing this episode of the Global Lithium Podcast to you today. Zalandez prides itself on providing a new way of doing things
in the lithium brine space. Are you tired of low confidence data, lack of actionable insights, and multi-day turnaround? Then head to www.zelandes.com to learn more.
At this point, we go back and I'm responding to why I don't believe the Atacama will be doing 400,000 tons of LCE in 2025.
You know, the whole narrative that Bertrand had when he was with Corfo and signed the deals with the royalty deals. Oh yeah, we'll be doing 400,000. You know, yeah. This is going to fund Chile, blah, blah, blah. Look at where they are now. I mean, this is 3 years later. They're at 100. They're at 100,000. I don't think they can go over two.
Yeah.
And that's why when you say, look at all those battery plants that are going to get built.
Yeah. So. Okay. Yeah. And the water issue, should investors be really worried about that? Or is that just kind of part of the deal?
Well, I think at 100,000 tons, it's just part of the deal. If your thesis is they, like Morgan Stanley, is, oh yeah, they can go to 400, no problem.
Yeah.
Then you bring all that stuff into play, and I just don't think that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I mean, the lithium's there, but the lithium's in Bolivia too.
That's right. And that'll never happen. Yeah.
That's right. That will never happen.
So Piedmont, quickly.
I think it's too early to make a definitive call on Piedmont. So as much as I'm in favor of the home team winning here, I've cut out portions of my answers that, you know, there's certain things that I'm not ready to say in a broad public forum. And, you know, I'd like to see more success in North Carolina. But I think the jury's still out.
Okay, I cut my teeth, battery business, with Hard Rock North Carolina, spodumene-based product. I mean, you look at Albemarle, this is the interesting thing about Albemarle, and I'll get to the answer, but I'm going to take this little detour. If I think it was 3 years ago, Albemarle listed the best Hard Rock assets in the world, and they had Kings Mountain as number two.
Right, yep.
Wodgina wasn't on that list, but Wodgina was known. Then all of a sudden they go out and spend $1 billion for Wodgina, and now Kings Mountain's like, oh yeah, it's in our inventory, we could do it.
After the Albemarle digression, I go back and summarize my thoughts on Piedmont.
If we had 100-mile-an-hour tailwind and everything happened right, this is what would happen, okay?
Yeah.
My thesis is, and hey, I'm an hour from their core shack.
Yeah.
I would love to see it happen here.
Yeah. Okay.
And my bottom line is,
the
most important thing is the team. You know, I'd like to see it happen, but I won't say this is a.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Appreciate
it. Pleasure. Yep.
I haven't done a Q&A episode in quite a while. I thought that it made sense to take the opportunity to record and ask me anything. I can't record expert calls due to the fact that in most cases, I agree to confidentiality, and so does the client on the other end of the phone. In this case, I did ask for permission to use the questions, and they were, you know, very typical of the kind of questions that I get. And, you know, unfortunately, I wasn't able to disclose the full level of candor with which I answer them. I think you have a very smart audience, so I think you can probably read in between the lines as required. In any case, thanks again for listening. The next episode will be a podcast with guests. You can find me on Twitter at Global Lithium and also on LinkedIn. I will end it here and just say Happy Father's Day before saying good night and good luck.